Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome back to the game Euro 2022 as we celebrate and rejoice history being made by the Lionesses. England beat Germany in extra time at Wembley to lift the European Championship for the first time. We will talk about the impact that Serena Wiegmann, the head coach, has made to this England side. We'll talk about the glorious atmosphere inside Wembley Stadium and out for that matter. And we'll also talk about what impact and legacy this tournament win could leave on the state of women's football in England. All that and more coming over the next 45, 50 minutes or so on the game. Hello and welcome back to the game Euro 2022, and it's gone too well. It's gone perfectly. We've absolutely smashed it out the ballpark here. England have created history. They've made history. They have won the first major women's tournament. Fantastic, dramatic, nail-biting final at Wembley. As you know, I'm sure you all know, against Germany, the eight-time champions. Chloe Kelly poking home. Doesn't matter what they look like. They all count, okay? And you know what? It's funny. On this podcast, I wrote notes and I was like, we should talk about the game. And it's a weird feeling. We've never been in this situation where it's like, does it even matter? We won. That's the only thing that matters. Why would we analyze how the game went? We got the W, we lifted the trophy, and there were absolutely fantastic emotional scenes at Wembley to go with it. And everything that we spoke about on the previous podcast about impact, about legacy, will hopefully now come to fruition. I don't know what to say. I'm joined by Gregor Robertson, the former England captain, Casey Stoney, of course. We will be with Molly Hudson, who's been down in Trafalgar Square very shortly, and the chief football writer of the Times, Owen Slott, will join us as well. But Casey, I've got to start with you. Just your overriding emotion after England's victory.
Well, can I be really honest? I didn't stop crying. Unbelievable. Because we tried for so many years to change the game, and they did that yesterday, and I'm just overcome with emotions, so proud. So what Serena Wiegmann has done with that team is incredible. To do back-to-back European championships with different nations, like Dame Serena for me, absolutely. And I watched them do that yesterday. I watched Jill Scott pick up her medal, Ellen White, and those that went through the generation of being told for so many years that you shouldn't and you can't just because you're a girl. What they did yesterday, we tried to do for so many years, but I think now was the right time to be a game changer. At Wembley, at home Euros, with 17.45 million people watching. And they deserved it. You know, I thought Germany were exceptional as well. I thought it was a very cagey, edgy game. I thought Germany gave us problems. You know, I was half celebrating. I know it was sad for Alexandra Popp, but I was half celebrating when I knew she weren't going to be in the team because I thought she was going to give us a real challenge. But that team showed, you know, and I heard Leah Williamson's quotes about legacy and they wanted to be winners. They've done that. And by winning... by winning yesterday, that changes the game forever.
We got the special moment as well with Chloe Kelly's goal. And we got the drama. That helped add the audience as well, didn't it? There is the case being made by a lot of people today, Casey, about huge transformational effect after Chloe Kelly's goal. Not the way she scored it, but maybe the way she celebrated it. You know, that moment of ecstasy, joy, pulling the shirt off, waving it over her head. It was reminiscent of the United States. 1999, you think of Brandi Chastain scoring that penalty against China in the final. That changed the shape of women's football in the United States, where you now are based. For generations to come, the United States, as we know, went on to success after success after success. Do you think there can be the same from our own liftoff moment happening, of course, as theirs did in their home nation?
Yeah, we have to. It's interesting because I was actually with Brad Chastain a couple of weekends ago. She was down at our training ground and I know she tweeted Chloe Kelly yesterday. And interestingly, I used to take Chloe Kelly to the train station when I was at Arsenal and she was training there and she couldn't drive. And what a journey she's been on. But I think the key part is here is we have to capitalise. Soccer here in America isn't the mainstream sport for men. That's where the competition is. And I don't like it. I think we are one nation. nation and we're one sport, but there's always the comparisons. And I don't think we should use this tournament as a stick to beat the men's team with either. You know, we should support England no matter what, and it should be pivotal. It's about the FA now making sure that they capitalise. It's about sponsors not jumping on for one game, you know, investing in the game now for the long term to make sure there's investment in that, the resources can change. And, you know, I said this will change the game forever. And what I meant was, like, I just want my little girls to grow up with the same opportunities and not have the same barriers and the same obstacles and the same things to face and be told they can't. You know, it's about schools making sure that football is on the PE curriculum for girls and boys, not just boys. And yeah, I'm really intrigued to see the first attendances at the WSL come September and see what they do. I know obviously Tottenham are playing in a big stadium, so they'll naturally get a big crowd. But what's the carryover? What are clubs like Manchester United, Chelsea, Arsenal, Tottenham going to invest in their marketing to make sure that we continue to get bums on seats? Because we've excited a nation. Now we've got to keep them. We've got to keep people coming back. We've got to keep the investment there. And we've got to make sure there is never a day where a little girl's told they can't play the game anymore. Those days should be gone.
Well, that was my next point. You spoke about your youngsters, you know, growing up and having opportunities, but there needs to be that framework, doesn't there? And you look at how things progressed in the United States after their win, and you're coaching there at the moment. We know that there's a huge college sports system there. That's a one way of developing people. And we know that football, particularly in Europe, doesn't match that framework. It's a weird one because the two worlds will collide, as you are clearly testament to. And for many young female players in this country, developing their game by going to the United States to university is a genuine opportunity if you're not going to become a professional player at the age of 18. Yes, we want people who can become pros. And we've had people playing for England when they're 15, 16, you know, early on, you know, in previous generations as well. I wonder what you think about how England can look at the United States, look at that framework, look at that pathway to either just becoming a pro, getting out there on the pitch and improving your game, where that comes from. You know, we want the impact for the fans, yes. From a player perspective, what can we learn from the United States?
Well, firstly, their pool of talent here is absolutely vast and it's massive because the amount of people that live here, but it's the culture. 99 changed the game forever here. And I, you know, our training ground is based at a local soccer club. And when you drive over the hill, there's hundreds of girls playing every single weekend. And it's the norm. For every three girls that pick up a ball, I think two boys pick up a ball. So it's very much, you know, orientated towards the girls a little bit more than it is the boys. I think we have to capitalize on the grassroots game, make sure that the facilities are right, make sure that there's no boundaries for the young girls, make sure that there's teams. I have to say, growing up, I wouldn't have wanted to play in a girls-only team. I would have wanted to play with boys. So having the access to both is really important because some girls won't play the game if it's a mixed game. They want to have the safety of playing with girls and staying with girls and the social element as well, because, you know, that's really important, research shows. But also, if you are a competitor and you want to play at a, you know, really high level and you want to achieve, then I would have gone down the boys' route. So having the ability to do both. But I think it's changing attitudes. It's changing the attitudes of the parents on the sidelines, because the amount of abuse I got because I was a girl playing in a boys league was unbelievable. I could have quit the game 1,000 times because of the amount of stuff that happened when I was growing up. You know, we're changing the attitudes of parents, changing the attitudes of coaches, changing the attitudes of PE teachers, changing the attitudes within the country, because I've always said this on a lot of different issues. I think football can speak to society. You know, we talk about equality and we're a million miles away from that. But what happened yesterday, I think, speaks to society as much as it speaks to the game. So yeah, it's really important. I also think the diversity issue is massively important as well, because there is not enough diversity in the women's game. I've been saying it for years. You know, I spoke when I was at Manchester United quite heavily on it, because it is not accessible to all. You know, you still have to pay to play in certain areas, the social elements, socioeconomic elements of the game, where you have to pay to play and players can't afford it in certain inner city areas. We have to make the game more accessible so the pool gets bigger and everybody has access to the game that we love.
Money is the key word, isn't it? It's going to start coming in to the women's game more and more, has done over the last five or so years. But of course, as you mentioned, bums on seats, that brings in money. You've got the sponsorship, broadcasters as well. You think the broadcasters are going to be more interested now that all eyes are on it. You think, I spoke about it on a previous podcast, didn't you? Those brands, those companies that maybe weren't in it before might want to. We heard Alex Scott speaking at the end of the game saying, look, those companies out there that haven't been interested in the game and suddenly want to jump on the bandwagon, don't call me. Well, that's one way of looking at it. They probably are going to call you, by the way, Alex, because everyone wants a part of it, right? But ultimately, it will come down to those who administer football, clubs and the organising bodies, the Football Association, to use that money wisely and to put it into those areas so that girls don't have to pay to to play football. Isn't that right?
Yeah, absolutely. I didn't turn professional until I was 30 years old, you know, and I'd been through a lot of caps and a lot of years before that and worked full time. So yeah, it is about investment. It is. And it's not about don't call me now. It's about call me, and it's about putting the game at the value that it's worth, you know, not devaluing it, not giving away tickets anymore so that we get bums on seats. Put a value on it. You know, if people then want to come, they want to come. Same with the sponsorship and the marketing. Put a value on it. You know, obviously there needs to be a lot of research about how many people are watching the game. And I think people will jump on it now and absolutely take advantage of it. Because if we can get that investment now and we can get those more eyes on the game, get more bums on seats, we can get more investment at the top, we get more grassroots club running at the bottom, that's just going to improve the women's game for the future.
Need to talk about this investment a little bit more, Gregor, don't we? 17 and a half pretty much million the TV peak, but there were 5 million more watching online. Absolutely staggering numbers, record numbers throughout the tournament in terms of viewers. Also inside the stadium, it was a record attendance for any European championship match, male or female for that matter. You know, there have been incredible sights to behold throughout the tournament. We heard at the end of the game about some of those clubs that had been slow on the uptake, let's call it that, being generous, right? Not wanting to be involved with hosting games at this European championship. There are other teams that took a long, long time to even have a women's game. Clubs in English football with vast sums of money. Some still don't, right? So where do we go from here in terms of those clubs cottoning on, all right, and accepting now that they need to be a big part of the women's side of the game as well?
I think the tone that Casey struck there is absolutely bang on. It's that you really kind of, there have been so many wrongs committed against women's football over a number of decades and also over recent years. We need to look to the future now. This is an opportunity and it's time to look forward. And I think a lot of individuals as well, actually. I did a piece from the ground yesterday, and a number of people I was speaking to, this is the first time they've ever been to women's games. There's a lot of new converts, a lot of people who've gone along to their first games, the first Lionesses games as well, and just thought this is brilliant. This is an amazing atmosphere. It's inspiring. It's great. It's a great spectacle and it's great entertainment as well. So it's not just about business. It's about, there've been a lot of people for whom this tournament has been sort of a revelation. I'd actually, to be brutally honest, put myself in that group. I think it's been an absolute joy to watch and cover. And I'm not in quite the same boat as you guys in that, you talk about we. I don't see it from the patriotic side, but I live in England. I've got a daughter who's 13 months. My partner Susie played for Derby County when she was younger, and she played in the FA Cup when she was 14. She got to about 18 and it was like, I'm going to go to uni now and there's not really much to see in terms of playing football. She was emotional last night when I got back from the game. She watched the game and she said she teared up. She's Scottish like me. It's not all about England, actually. It's about what this England team represent. And that for me anyway, after being at that game last night, was the thing that stuck with me. This is not, clearly there's a huge, huge patriotic side to this, but it's actually bigger than England.
I mean, listen, I might as well refer to Casey on this. It was emotional. I know you said that you've been crying the whole time. I kept thinking back to when I was a kid, and you'd always watch interviews on like BBC London with players from Charlton and stuff, right? And they'd be talking about how there weren't opportunities, there weren't avenues for them in the same way there were for the men's game. This is when I was a kid, right? Not that I was big into women's football then, but, you know, over the course of the years, being in journalism and speaking to people who have made so many sacrifices just to keep their own journey going in football, you know, I thought of them yesterday morning as soon as I woke up. I thought about all the people that have been literally flying the flag for so many years for this, screaming and shouting about it in the face of so many naysayers and people in football told them basically it'll never work. And look, so many people that have passed, you know, we're talking a century back, people who were banned from playing football, who I'm sure we don't even know their names, had a love for the game and weren't even able to play it. You know, I mean, they're probably looking down on Wembley Stadium last night. Hopefully they were, and they had a big smile on their face wherever they might be. Casey, just tell me what you know, those people that you've met and yourself in the game, what it must mean.
Yeah, I'm kind of lost for words really on it, but I could go on and on. Like, I know I saw a tweet about Kelly Simmons, and Kelly Simmons has been working in the FA now for 30 years. And it was 2 minutes before the end of the game. She said, 30 years of hard work and finally we've done it. I look back and I was at Charlton when we played in an FA Cup final. And 2 weeks later, we lost our job because they disbanded the women's team because they got relegated. You know, I've been on a hell of a journey myself. I've seen the likes of Karen Walker, you know, Sammy Britton. Hope Powell, she's played a massive part in this in terms of what she did with the England team, getting central contracts, knocking doors down when people didn't even want to open them, you know, and Sue Campbell going in the FA and changing, you know, the way they do things within there, the hiring of Serena Wiegmann and what she's been able to do. This means more than I think you could ever really possibly say, because it's not just about England, it's about women. And I think that's the part, is changing the narrative around women in sport. You know, when you had one sentence off the back of a final, now we're front and back pages. Women's football is going to be, people are going to watch it. You're still going to have absolutely your audience that's like, don't want to watch women's football, don't ram it down my face, don't have female pundits, except you're going to have people that are going to continue to say that. But I think those are going to become less and less and less, and the game is changing. For me personally, like, you know, I texted Jill yesterday, I said, you've no idea what you've done. Like, in terms of changing the game forever for all the little girls. And we talk about the little girls picking up, but it's more important that it's everybody, because my little boy's going to grow up knowing his sisters are his equal. He's going to grow up knowing that women's football is the norm and successful women's football is the norm. He's going to grow up in a world where, you know, he's not going to tell them that they can't. My little girls aren't going to get bullied for playing the game. They're not going to get told they shouldn't and can't do something, and that it's a man's world and that it's a man's game. And that's so important. Like, and I think it's a sport. You know, I always look at tennis and you don't compare male and female tennis players. I look at athletics and you don't compare, because biologically we are different and the comparisons need to stop. And I think this tournament has gone a long way to do that. And like, I always thank those that went before me because they paved the way for me to have the opportunities. I'm living in San Diego as a head coach of a NWSL team, living my absolute dream. If you'd have said to me 30 years ago when I was 10, I'd have been doing this. I couldn't even dare to dream because I couldn't see it. Now we can see it. You can believe in it. You can be it. And Gregor got me well in again then when he was talking about, you know, his missus, because this means so much to so many in the game. And it also means so much to so many that are going to come into the game now. So, yeah, so proud, overwhelmed, and yeah, it's a game changer, an absolute game changer.
Got to think about what the clubs can do now. Like we spoke about a little bit earlier on, in terms of the money coming in, yes. You know, they have to capitalize on this. They're going to have to find the right price point. They're going to have to find the right marketing. They're going to have to use the stars, if they have any that are in this squad, as much as they possibly can to try and get people through the gates. But we know there's going to be, and this is the balance, isn't it? There'll be offers now for the WSL in terms of broadcasting. And I know from my profession, you know, if you put things front and center on TV, you then get fewer people going to the ground because they can watch it, of course, from the comfort of their own home, which in July maybe isn't a big deal, but in the heart of November and February when it's ice cold, especially when you might be wanting to take young children to a game and it might be an evening game, for example, they need to find the right slots for these games now. They need to find the right coverage. They need to think about where the big games are in terms of men's football and whether eyes will be on that and whether they can, of course, you know, Super Sunday, let's call it that, Gregor. We won't name companies, right? But does it need to now have a WSL game intertwined with it, you know? And the FA works out the Premier League and the WSL and a TV broadcast schedule over the weekend that fits like a glove, if you like.
I think scheduling is the biggest thing, you know, and it's been its biggest issues in the past, if I'm honest, in terms of scheduling. You can still have those Super Sundays. You can still have those moments. It's making sure the scheduling has a key mark game, like a key game every single weekend, whether it's a midweek game or a weekend. Can you have a big fixture, no matter what it is? And then you sell the hell out of that fixture. Then everybody else can still attend all the other games, you know, and it's making sure that, you know, I watched the Premier League when it was in COVID and it was so quiet, it was a difficult watch. Now that's been women's football for so many years. The atmosphere is bought by the fans and the crowd, you know, so we still need to get people coming into the ground, even if it's on the TV. I think the fact that they could schedule it around, you know, I think they've tried to do that recently where they've put the big games in the men's international windows, which I think is still another window you can use and exploit. I think it's encouraging. And I went to the men's European Championship final last year. I would have never took my children there. It was absolutely one of the worst football experiences I have ever been to in my entire life. I was frightened. I don't know, because I didn't go yesterday and I'm gutted I didn't. But I can imagine Wembley Way looked very different yesterday. And that's a unique selling point.
That's what I wrote about in the paper today. I didn't go with an agenda to say, you know, let's compare it to last summer. But there were people who were at the game last summer. And there was guys there who were there with three daughters saying there's no chance in a million years we were taking them. And they were beaming and they were so excited. And it was just such a happy vibe. There was so, you know, just excitement and happiness. That was the two things that just leapt out at you. There was no like edge. There was no, you know, there's one thing that was quite funny. There was a thing that was like a temporary tattoo stall and it was saying, dispose of your waste. Apparently these events make 7 tons of waste per day. And it's like, dispose of your waste responsibly. And they were like, you could get tattoos that said, don't be a waste man and things like that. But then you just, so then you just went, hang on a minute, you look down and there's no plastic cups, there's no beer cans, there's no nothing. There was a family sitting on the steps at like leading up to Wembley playing cards. There was like these referees, street performers dressed as referees on stilts, like brandishing yellow cards to little kids and stuff. Everyone was just having a great time. It's an amazing thing. There's people who sneer and they're kind of cynical about that. And, you know, and there, we have to be honest, there is something about in the men's game, the tribalism that we all enjoy, but this is different and it's special. It's like, it's an amazing experience. I have absolutely, you know, loved every minute, every moment of it and at every game. But Wembley was just something else because it was like, it was kind of symbolic. There was this, you stepped out of Wembley Park Station and there was this sea of people kind of leading towards the arch, just all like marching towards the kind of what they hope is going to be a vision of the future. I thought it was really moving actually.
Yeah, absolutely superb. Wish I could have been there. I've got to say, we had a long-standing family event yesterday, so I was the guy watching on his mobile phone, not speaking to any of the, I have to say, my partner's family. But in a positive sense, she messaged me. She was out working this morning, and mid-morning she just messaged. And she's not into football massively. I've taken her to a few games, and she said, I really wished we would have gone to the football yesterday. So, you know, there is an impact for those people who... She's not a football fan at all, I've got to say. She hates it. She has to watch a lot of it. She's not a football fan. If we can get many more of those people interested, then we're definitely doing something right. But I'm glad you mentioned the nature of Wembley Stadium yesterday, Gregor. Up next on the podcast, we'll find out what the game was like, what the atmosphere was like, the experience of the team in particular, and what Serena Wiegmann has brought. And we will be dipping into some of the fantastic scenes in Trafalgar Square as well. So stay with us on the game.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
So joining us on the game podcast next is the Times chief football writer Owen Slott, who was at Wembley yesterday. We'll be speaking to Molly Hudson in Trafalgar Square in a second. But Owen, I just wanted to start with you and pick up a little bit on what Gregor was just speaking about in terms of how he felt with the atmosphere, the difference and the contrast with last summer at Wembley Stadium as well. It was a magical day for England fans. Just tell us what it was like, if you can, being one of those fortunate people who were inside Wembley Stadium, got to experience it firsthand, because it was, like I say, a very special day.
Yeah, it really was magical. I've been to two of the England games, the Austria game and the quarterfinal against Spain, and both times had sort of, you know, the difference between a men's game the demographic, the behavior, just the general festival feel is just so clear. But then to get it on Sunday night, last night, you know, at a packed Wembley, at a final where, you know, the bloody 56 years and all that nonsense is on the line. I mean, it was a grand occasion, but it was also a unique one. And I'm just sort of wrestling with how we're going to look back on this. But certainly last night, I felt that we were there for an occasion that felt historical. And today, 24 hours on, I feel a bit emotionally knackered, but I still feel that last night, yesterday was a moment of history that I was really privileged to witness and just enjoyed hugely.
In terms of the football, in terms of Serena Wiegmann and what she's done to this team, I think it's been a remarkable transition. I don't think any of us were picturing this when Phil Neville announced that he would be leaving the job. Casey, I should probably ask you about this. From a football perspective, what has Serena Wiegmann done to change this team and make them immediate winners?
She's been unbelievable, hasn't she? You know, you think about that achievement of doing back-to-back European championships, winning them in your home nation of different countries. Unbelievable. She's instilled confidence and unwavering confidence in this team. She's very clear around her expectations. Every player in that squad knew what they were there to do, whether they were to start, whether they were to finish, or whether they were to not play. And I think that really helped them manage their emotions within a tournament. They're so together. You could see that they were having fun. And she obviously clearly did a lot of scenarios. So she was a scenario-based head coach. With this happens, we do this. If this happens, we do this. So her planning and preparation and for the what-ifs has been second to none. And you think about those key moments where they've needed that, you know, Millie Bright going up front and causing problems, and obviously Ella Toon getting that equaliser against Spain, otherwise we're out. You know, even I thought Ella Toon's finish was exquisite yesterday, and it couldn't have been more fitting that it was Kira Walsh that played that pass, because for me, she was the player of the tournament, and people won't talk about what she did, but she was absolutely outstanding. And she's trusted these players. You know, Mary Earps grew in stature during this tournament, key saves in key moments. And she put belief in her. You're my number one. This is what I want from you. And, you know, they just said they were nothing but winning was in their mind, you know, and it was an incredible occasion. The football came home. And I think now, before this game, she's talking about the experiences this tournament to prepare for the World Cup. So she's constantly planning and preparing and looking ahead. And yeah, she's the best. She is absolutely the best. And I think England want to keep hold of her for as long as they can.
Isn't Serena Wiegmann the boss that we all want now? And I hope my own boss is listening. but I mean, she, just the magnificent way that she manages people, the way she's so calm, the way she makes them feel they can do anything, the way she talks to them with such honesty, the way she makes them feel confident to express themselves. I mean, you just go, I just would love a bit of Serena Wiegmann in my life. I think there must be loads of people going, that is just the way to do it.
Beth Mead was asked about her after the game, and she just went, what a woman. What a woman. Yeah. just kind of exasperated. It's like, you know, I don't really know what to say. She was asked what she'd said in the kind of huddle before extra time. She was just so calm. Like, she'd already sort of instilled the belief in us, which meant we had the belief in each other. There was still that kind of calmness there, even as the kind of maelstrom swirled around her. And I think that is the kind of the key thing. It's been managing to kind of make the players feel such kind of strong belief that they can do this. And that kind of grounds them, I think, even in the most sort of high pressure, well, moments that they've never experienced before. And it's been a remarkable achievement.
I think for me, I don't know how you feel about it, Casey. One of the good things about seeing some male coaches in the women's side of the game is that the women coaches that replace them can show us how bad they were. Because these coaches are doing something special. The likes of Serena Wiegmann, Emma Hayes, maybe it has transcended in other countries. Maybe that message has got through in other countries that female coaches are just as capable. But actually, I think we've got so many coaches now showing us that that is the case. I don't want to be one of those people that thinks that the goal should always be to manage in men's football. But I definitely think football has had an issue, not just in terms of coaching, but with the capability of minority groups in major roles all of those myths are being dispelled by some incredible people inside the game.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And what people need to realise is, as a minority group, be it female or diversity, you have to work twice as hard to get in the positions that you get in. So normally you've really worked, you've earned your stripes. You know, every coaching course you go on, you're probably the only one in the room. You have to earn the respect for 5 days whilst you're on there, you know, and you have to do all the work. You have to work twice as hard, and you dare not fail. You know, because you're judged on you know, your first result, your second year result, and then you're judged on your gender because of it, rather than it actually being about your ability to do the job. So, yeah, I think they are doing huge amounts for football. I think Serena was, she's going to have after-dinner engagements, leadership conferences coming out of her ears, you know, whenever she decides to step out of the game, because how she remains so calm in the chaos, I think we could all learn incredible lessons from. And that's because she's so planned and prepared. She knows what she's going to do before it happens. Therefore, when it does happen, instinct just kicks in and she knows what she's got to do. So listen, she's right up there for me as a role model, you know, in terms of where I want to take my career. And she's someone that I would look to and say, right, you know, how can I achieve anything near what she's achieved?
Well, speaking of keeping the calm in the chaos, Molly Hudson has been in Trafalgar Square, where the England team have been celebrating with thousands of fans a little bit earlier on today. Fantastic images. Molly, one of the things I did want to ask you about, and we saw it a little bit more today, the personality and character of this England squad and the way that they have been able to form a bond with the English public, the English football fans, in such a short space of time is a real positive for the game as well.
I think it feels quite surreal. I think that was probably the thought process as I was kind of watching the Lionesses at Trafalgar Square today. It was like, I can't quite believe this is happening, because we knew what the potential of this team was, and we knew that, you know, if they won this tournament, what could possibly happen. But it all happened very quickly. I think if we watched the final last night, and suddenly these players, you know, Chloe Kelly, who started this tournament as someone that wasn't even sure if she could play in it, you know, was in the last year literally hadn't been able to go to the toilet by herself because of this anterior cruciate ligament injury, was suddenly able to be a national hero. And it's like, it changes so quick. And I think that's what, you know, we as journalists that were there, you know, Owen and Gregor was there as well. You don't quite realise just how quick, in a second, in a shot, Chloe Kenny's life has changed. And you look at the team today, and there were thousands of people at Trafalgar Square for a women's football event. And, you know, maybe this sounds a bit emotional, maybe it sounds like an England fan, but I never thought I'd see that in my lifetime for an England women's team. And that's what this team have done. And I don't think that legacy quite sinks in, and I don't think it will sink in for quite some time, because what they've done is literally changed society in this country and beyond. And I think it's quite incredible to see all of the fans today with their women's shirt, with their, you know, the names on the back, and you just think, you know what, this team have really changed things in this country. And I can only hope, as someone that, you know, fundamentally is a supporter of women's football, that this legacy continues, because that's what the players deserve. And it's just an incredible achievement for all of them, really.
I mean, for someone so young, Molly, my only message to you is you've got to be a little bit more optimistic. I mean, leave it at least 10 more years before you turn into a grumpy old woman, please.
I'm quite worried that my career has peaked at 24, to be honest.
We've won
a European Championship in a home tournament. I mean, what's the best we can do? Maybe a home World Cup? And realistically, that's not going to happen for a few years. So it's like, well, maybe I've reached the peak at 24. What more is there to come?
I think some opportunistic politician will be like, preparing a bed already, actually.
I certainly hope they are. I think, you know, what we've seen this month is actually that, for all of what we discussed at the men's tournament last summer, this country can produce a fantastic tournament without any of that negative spotlight. And we can do that. And I think that only holds England in good stead if they were to bid for a World Cup. You know, I think the talk of a Europe bid that would perhaps mean that we didn't bid for the next World Cup after the one next year. But I just think this has really started a movement in this country for women's football. And I think, you know, we talked before this tournament about the fact that clubs were literally having to be begged to hold these games. That won't happen again. If we held a World Cup in this country, stadiums will be begging to be one of those stadiums, because that's how much the women's game has progressed in the last literally a month. And that's incredible for the sport. It's incredible for the legacy of this tournament that actually people will want to be involved in this movement now, because that's how big and how important that it's become, and how engaged the general public have become to this tournament as well. Because, you know, you walk down the street now, you sit on the tube, and people are talking about it. And that's something that, you know, in my lifetime would never have happened about women's football. And I think that's just the most fantastic thing that's come out of this tournament.
I think I'll end by asking you all the same question, but I'll begin with you, Molly, as you're with us very shortly. What is your hope for what happens next to women's football in the UK?
My hope is that the Women's Super League games can experience what we all experienced last night. A crowd that, you know, they lined Wembley Way with streaked shirts of Gerrard, of Gascoigne, but alongside them was Williamson. And to see an engaged football fan base that really cared and really understood, but was willing to go in and watch that game at Wembley. We want more than that. We don't want fans to just watch at Wembley. We want them to go to these home stadiums. And I think that's the key. If we, you know, we've got a World Cup in less than 12 months' time, and we must really extend this legacy in that period of time. We can't let it drop. We can't let women's football become a tournament sport. We need to extend this legacy. We need to see these Lionesses that have performed so well this summer at their stadiums, their home stadiums, for their clubs. They're playing fantastically. You take someone like Millie Bright, who's had a fantastic season for Chelsea in the past. We need people to go and support these players all year round, because that's what they deserve. That level of performance that they've delivered this summer, they're performing all year round. People just don't know. They don't see it. They don't realise where it is. And that, for me, is the legacy that I want this tournament to have. That it's not just a tournament that they can watch these players for their clubs and they can deliver. And I think for the players, that's the most important thing, that they're not just... We don't just want Chloe Kelly to become a hero for a week, a month. We want her to become a hero for the rest of her career. We want people to come and see her at the CFA, at the City Football Academy. And I think that's the main thing, to really understand that this is not just a tournament, this is their legacy, and these players aren't going anywhere. They're coming back to their clubs to continue what they've done before the tournament.
Molly Hudson, thank you for joining us on the Game Podcast. Clearly, Molly, in a very busy and loud Trafalgar Square this afternoon, joining us on the phone as well. So apologies if you had any difficulty hearing her, but she's been brilliant on the podcast all summer. So Molly, thank you so much for being with us. Owen, I'll come to you next. What's your hope for how this tournament win can affect football in the UK, women's football in particular?
I think I'd say that, I agree with what Molly says, but rather than repeat that, and probably not so eloquently, I'd just say I think and I hope that it influences attitudes to girls and to girls' sport, and to how brilliant it can and should be. I think it's been interesting that this massive push for women's football. Great, absolutely great. But you know, you might not want to play women's football, but you might now think that you could do any other women's sport. And I just think it could contribute to the whole movement that sport should and can be accessible, and that, you know, the number of teenage girls that give up sport is terrible, really. And that if these Lionesses can inspire girls to feel that sport is for them, whatever sport that is, then that kind of goes to what they to their broader mission that they've talked about, which is it's not just about football, it's more a societal thing. And I think it can be that.
I can only really echo what's been said, and it's that two kind of prongs to it, and that one, I want, from a purely, partly from a selfish point of view, I want, if what the Lionesses have done this summer, and hopefully continue to do, if that means more opportunities for my daughter, who's very young, and, you know, children her age, and young children who want to play sport, who just have the same opportunities as boys, then that will be an amazingly powerful thing. And when it comes to looking at the WSL, I can only echo what Molly says. It's about visibility. It's about its projection, and it's about its growth, because the more we see them on a weekly basis, on a kind of day-to-day basis, and, you know, there's a part of the kind of whole sport and news agenda, and it's not just looking at, you know, this huge kind of wave of attention when major tournaments come around for England. That's the way that women's football will grow, kind of on a more sustainable basis. And so those are the two things that I really hope and wish that come to fruition after this.
Casey, aside from winning the World Cup next summer, what's your hope for how this can affect women's football in the UK?
Yeah, I think that World Cup and sustained success is important. I've been at a club in the WSL, and my call out is do more. Do more as clubs, promote this team more, put more money into marketing the game, put more money into, you know, making the game more visible. Do more. That's the only way we're going to capitalise. And I have to say, even if you don't want to, it's not all about being a professional footballer. It's about having access to the sport. So making sure we have more girls' teams up and down the country, making sure more girls have access, but not just, I take this podcast as an example. I'm a female head coach. Molly's a female journalist. I think what this does is show, especially throughout this tournament, there's so many different roles within the game now for females. And it's promoting that too, because not every little girl grows up being a dream of a professional footballer, but they can still be in the game and love the game. And, you know, clubs need to do more. The FA are doing a great job. They need to continue. And it's about grassroots, and it's about the very top. It's about having more females at board level too, making critical decisions. So, you know, my hope for the game is big, but we need to capitalise now. Like Molly said, it can't be once every 4 years that we have this conversation.
Yeah, this isn't really the end of the road. The work starts here. Yeah, it's been a great, great summer. It's a very weird feeling. I'm sure you all feel the same way. That was too easy, wasn't it? Wasn't it?
it didn't feel like that last night at Wembley, to be honest with you. Honestly, it certainly didn't. But I know what you're saying. There's been moments where it's been like, wow, they're just an unstoppable force. But there were moments last night when I thought, oh no, it's going to penalties. And that's going to be them.
Do you know, I always felt confident. They built that into me, I think, during the course of the tournament. I felt like, a bit how we used to see the Germans. It was like, well, even if they don't play well, they'll get a result. I sort of had that feeling about England, even if they weren't at their fluent best, that they could definitely win the game against Germany. I was always comfortable. All right, maybe that's a bit of a lie. That's a bit of a lie, I've got to say. But it happened in the end. And yeah, absolutely magnificent. So congratulations to Serena Wiegmann and the Lionesses. It's been a real pleasure to be with you all, especially you, Casey, joining us for the game podcast throughout this summer. So thank you for being with us. I know you've got an extremely busy schedule, and we've recorded all of these first thing in the morning where you are as well. So really appreciate it. Really enjoyed it. Thank you all for listening as well. And we will be back very, very soon with the game podcast as we look ahead to the start of the Premier League season. But we've appreciated you all summer. Remember, make sure you subscribe. And if you want to get more of our award-winning journalism, read more of Molly's great articles, then you can check it out, thetimes.co.uk/thegame, or just download the Times app. We'll see you soon.